And welcome back into Morning Drive on this Thursday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are broadcasting live inside of Jack Daniel's Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena for tonight's Preds and Maple Leafs showdown. Some college basketball to get us going here in hour number two. Braden, four games tonight, and we started off Loyola Chicago against Nevada. A couple of SEC teams in action as well, as Texas A&M takes on Michigan, Kansas State, Kentucky, and then in the nightcap, Florida State and Gonzaga. Any interest from the Vols Nation now that the Vols are out and you're still two of the SEC's eight teams remaining?
Well, I mean, for me, every single one of these games is interesting. So, I mean, once you get to the Sweet 16, I was actually watching Steph Curry highlights last night on his run where he dropped, what was it, like 33 against Wisconsin and 40 against, I can't remember who their second-round opponent was.
What is that, a decade ago now?
Yeah, 07, 08-ish. And then he put up 25 against Kansas and couldn't beat number one-seeded Kansas in the Elite Eight. I think when we get to that point, it's just, you know, at this point of the tournament, every game is awesome. Now, there's not one, two, or a three-seed today playing, so that's very unusual. Michigan, Texas A&M, what I think could save today is that Florida State is a 9-seed, Kansas State is a 9-seed, and A&M is a 7-seed. I think the fact that those three are Power 5 teams, I know this flies against the face of Cinderella, but to me, because those are Power 5 brands, big power schools, that they're known commodities a little bit more than the Loyola Chicagos and Nevadas of the world, I think that helps tonight from an intrigue standpoint. A&M, at this stage of the game, A&M and Michigan are fairly evenly matched. Michigan's a 2-point favorite. Kentucky's a 5-point favorite. Gonzaga's a 5-point favorite. I think they're not your average sevens and nines. They're Power 5 teams. So I think that adds a little intrigue to me. Certainly A&M Michigan, I think, is the best game. Gonzaga's a big powerhouse brand, and they're the highest. You know, they're a 4-seed left. You got Michigan as a 3. I'll correct myself. They're a 3-seed. It's Kansas State, Kentucky, though, just – I feel like Kentucky's going to run away with that. Nevada, Loyola, Chicago should be a really interesting game. But how many people nationally? I'm interested to see how many nationally tune into that game. And frankly, this is the easiest path Kentucky will ever have in a Sweet 16 and an Elite Eight to get to a Final Four that they've ever – I mean, ever. This will be the easiest path to the Final Four that they've ever had to go through. They beat – if they were to make it, hypothetically, if they were to make it, they could beat, what, Davidson, Buffalo, Kansas State, and Loyola Chicago to get to the Final Four. That's ridiculous.
That's like an NIT road.
That's ridiculous. So, yeah. And then I don't mean to take anything away from those teams because Davidson was playing really good basketball. And
you can only play who
Buffalo
you're scheduled
had,
to play.
Right. Buffalo had the great upset, and Kansas State is, you know, got lucky. They played UMBC instead of Virginia. It's just kind of that's the way the tournament goes. And when we talk about it being totally random, this is what we talk about. I do think that it still delivers from a drama standpoint. If there's no drama tonight, then the people with the TV ratings, they're going to be nervous because tomorrow night should be great. Tomorrow the game should be great. Is Florida State Gonzaga getting people's blood going?
See, that's the only game.
9 o'clock tonight?
I'm glad that's the late game because that's the only game I really don't have any intrigue in. Because I look at it from a storyline perspective. Obviously, Loyola. Can Sister Jean and the Magic keep on going? Michigan is a 30-win team with, I think, arguably the most underrated coach in America in John Beilein. And obviously, Kentucky in, quote, a down year for Kentucky standards. So I think you've got a couple of storylines right there.
And A&M, to me, is, you know, they were injured most of the season. They're more like a 5-seed anyway. Like, that's a team that has 5-seed talent, four or 5-seed talent that just didn't collect the wins they needed to in the regular season to earn that seed. So I think that's a team, when you look at Michigan A&M, there's a reason that a 7-seed and a 30-win Michigan team is a 2-point spread, because they're way more evenly matched. I agree with you on John Beilein. I think John Beilein is the best X's and O's coach in college basketball, and I think he gets more out of his players. They've got some legit – I mean, Mortis Wagner is a fantastic player in the middle. He's going to be absolutely challenged by those big guys down low from A&M. That is a really good matchup tonight. The Kentucky-Kansas State game is more just for I think Kentucky runs away with it. I think it's a boring game. I think Kentucky is significantly better. But it's Kentucky, and they're young, and you just never know. They are playing their best basketball probably right now. I think Gonzaga-Florida State's going to be a better game than you think. I think Florida State's a more battle-tested team than people think, a more physical team than people think, and I think they can hang with Gonzaga. So I think you could have four really good basketball games. And if that's the case, then everybody's happy. Everybody's good. If you get blowouts, people are going to tune out so fast tonight. They're going to be watching the Preds. They're going to be watching NFL draft stuff. I mean, it's just it's going to go so quickly from, oh, cute story to boring basketball. That's the danger for today.
I think tomorrow night's going to be really good as well. I mean, you're going to get Kansas and Clemson. Villanova, West Virginia, I think, could be the game of the tournament to date. I think that's got an opportunity for West Virginia to win that game. It call me crazy. Duke and Syracuse, that's the biggest spread mismatch. I mean, Duke's an 11-point favorite, but it is a brand in Syracuse and Boeheim. And then Texas Tech, a great story against Purdue, who's dealing with an injury to one of their better players. Some of the marquee programs that are still left get going tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night's much more from a name brand standpoint. I mean, you got Duke, Kansas, Villanova, Purdue, West Virginia, even Syracuse as an 11 seed as a power brand is a name that people know. And Clemson is sort of a, you know, we're talking about a Power 5 team in the best conference in basketball as a 4 seed, and no one is talking about them. Mm-hmm. Literally no one is talking about Clemson. So, yeah, tomorrow you've got 2 versus 3 and, you know, 1 versus 4 and 1 versus 5. Like, tomorrow you have what feels like much bigger basketball. So that's why today I think it's about the action. If the action delivers, then it sort of proves that the tournament is, like, upset proof, right? Like, you can have whatever team you want, and it proves that the NCAA tournament can be great.
I am feeling 2 upsets in the next 2 days. I think Florida State's going to beat Gonzaga tonight.
Ooh.
And then I think tomorrow West Virginia will knock off Villanova.
I think look at that. You're the Vegas guy. The fact that A&M is only a 2-point underdog tells me something.
Yeah. Like, yeah, Michigan, and I have Michigan going to the Final Four, but they can definitely, because I don't think they have a ton of star power, they can be one of those teams that gets knocked off. And I got to tell you this, and I know Loyola Chicago defeated Tennessee. I get all of that, but I am kind of pulling for them to be that story to keep going. Well, like, I want 3 powerhouses and then 1 long shot, Loyola being that one.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. Nevada, I don't think, is too far from that. I mean, Nevada, Nevada's obviously a better regular season, but they were an at-large bid out of the Mountain West. That's not really that different than winning the Missouri Valley as a champion. So I think they both qualify as sort of that quote-unquote Cinderella. I think we've been captivated by one old nun. And like that's like the nation is like, they'd all know the name and that's what's attached to it. And, you know, the way that, I think the other thing is the way they've won games. Now, you can make the same case for Nevada. If you went to those games here, it was a 13-point comeback against Texas here at Bridgestone Arena to send it into overtime. I had a chance, you know, Julian and I were sitting there watching that game just going, this is crazy. And then a tournament record 22-point second half comeback against Cincinnati, a game that shall not be mentioned ever again. That's a tournament record level of accomplishment. So I think you're looking at 2 teams and the way Loyola Chicago won, which is 2 buzzer beaters. Essentially, one with 4/10 of a second to go and one with 3 or 4 seconds to go. They won on last-second jump shots. That adds to the charm of the story, even if it is difficult for Tennessee fans to keep an eye on.
615-737-1025. All right, Josh Upton, we've been very negligent with the stupid poll question of the day, but let's get it going right now.
Now, the stupid poll question of the day.
All right, time for the stupid poll question of the day. We do it every day on the show. You can vote at 1025_MD. And we had to come up with a stupid poll question. We've kind of floated around some ideas during the break. But, Chase McCabe, what do we have in the hopper?
Should it be my responsibility for the stupid poll question?
It's actually pretty good.
So I'm thinking something Hall of Fame related.
Okay, so where I was trying to go with this, and I'm racking my brain.
Do you like Hall of Fames?
Do you like Hall of Fames? But something with this show, and the easy question would be of the 4 of us, who's a Hall of Famer, and you're all going to say Derek Mason because,
right,
you know,
he's actually qualified.
Right. So I think we would have to specify if we did that question.
How about will Butch Jones go into the Intern Hall of Fame? Just a thought.
Just let that one hang there for a minute.
Let that one marinate.
Bad Coach Hall of Fame.
Something.
Guy
something
won 9
Hall
games 2 years in a row, boys.
What are we thinking here? Hall of Fame.
Orange glasses off.
Who's the biggest?
I think he deserves to get.
Famer?
Hey, hang on. He deserves to get fired. But I think the fact that everyone thinks Butch Jones what, like, turn the program into a heat, like a steaming pile of ash, I think is just stupid and irresponsible. I think he rebuilt the program and got them to a point where they were competing in the East. He wasn't the right guy for the job. The program fell off in this final season. He got fired. He deserved to get fired. They should have moved on. But for everyone to call it a complete debacle is absurd. Do they not remember the Derek Dooley era, which immediately preceded
it? All right.
All right, so since we had a lot of Hall of Fame discussion in the first hour surrounding the Preds, maybe something along the lines of what Hall of Fame means the most to you? Cooperstown, Canton.
Will and Dominican Sue get into the Hall of Fame?
You know, Chipper Jones is expecting another son, and he is going to name him Cooper.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So he has Shea, and now he's going to have Cooper for Cooperstown because he's going in this year.
It's the only professional athlete that I am incapable of being objective.
I know.
Why is that?
Oh, he wasn't around for that?
Oh, no,
that's
I don't
right.
think
wasn't
he,
around for what?
Oh, I hate Chipper Jones. He's a worthless scumbag of a human being that doesn't deserve anything that he's ever accomplished, and I'm kidding about all of that. But I'm completely...
This is just from an angry Mets fan.
He named his kid after my stadium.
Right, because he owned your stadium.
Yes, I know. He had 319. I get it.
Yes.
He had like a 900 OPS.
Well, that's your fault that you're a Mets fan.
Chipper Jones
sucks.
You're
just mad because he made
terrible.
The Mets his
He's a bad human
friend.
Being. He's a bad human being. He's a bad baseball player. Worst switch hitter probably ever. I don't know.
Okay.
All right, so we will come up with
objectivity.
A stupid poll question on the other side to give it to you. The vote on Twitter at 1025_MD. But, guys, we have the latest with Ndamukong Suh. Details on the other side. Stay right there. It's Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're inside of Bridgestone Arena tonight. Big one for the Preds, getting you set for that. We'll talk coffee with the coach coming up in just about 15 minutes. But some interesting news late yesterday regarding Ndamukong Suh and whether or not he's coming to the Tennessee Titans. I think, guys, this has got to at least somewhat increase the odds that Nashville is a landing destination for Suh, as Ndamukong Suh has canceled his meeting with the Oakland Raiders, so that takes one of the four teams out of the equation, leaving us with the Titans, the Saints, or the Rams.
And the Seahawks are out at this point?
Seahawks are out. I think the Rams are the most likely, especially if you want to play next to a guy like Aaron Donald, but I think this also helps the Titans just from a sheer percentage standpoint. There was three other destinations, now there's only two.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. The longer this drags out, though, the weirder it feels. Like, what is he? Is it? You know, you guys were floating the idea that maybe that he didn't like any of the offers financially, and that he was. And I kind of said, well, maybe he's got great offers, and a lot of common sense will tell you that if he hasn't signed yet, there hasn't been a good enough offer for him. So I'm starting to buy into what you guys were selling me the other day on this, and the question is. You know, if the Titans have offered him sort of a middle of the road deal and he doesn't like it, I like that for the Titans. Is he willing to take a discount? It doesn't appear that it seems like he's going to wait it out, and he's going to wait as long as it takes. And I don't know when does he have to sign by. I mean, we still got months before they have to. You know, there's weeks and weeks and weeks before they have to actually report to anything. So there's no rush on his part. This does give the Titans a better shot to sign him with somebody out of the equation. I'm with you. I still think the Saints and the Rams are more likely situations, but I'm the only guy on the show that's okay with that. I'm the only one that doesn't want to see him sign for more. If he's a two-year, $25 million, two-year, $30 million contract, and a lot of guarantees on the front end, and it doesn't hit the cap too hard before Mariota's deal comes up, then maybe I could see it and justify it, and I want to see what he would do, and is he going to play hard, and does it fit the locker room and all that stuff? I'd be willing to take the risk, but to me, it's all about there's a heavy risk involved. And
yeah, I'm not getting into a bidding war with the Rams and the Saints and breaking the bank for a guy who's a defensive tackle that's 31 years old. I mean, I'm with you from that standpoint. It just looks like, boy, he had a number in his head, and he's not getting close to that right now. I don't know how much. I mean, look, he's still a good player, but when you are somebody that's got the marquee name like Ndamukong Suh, and you are now on the market for now, what is it, 12 days? I think that's pretty telling.
But I still think that's his own doing. He's trying to influence the market. I think he's trying
to. Well, every day that goes by, he doesn't have influence.
No, I agree with that. But I think he wanted to see what his value was, and then he's going to, You know, I'm sure the Saints gave him an offer and he came here and said, well, you know, they're offering me this. What right. are you going to offer me? I mean, look, that's part of negotiation. So I think that, you know, it seems to be down to those three teams. I would say the Rams probably has the best chance of getting him yeah. just because of, you know, Aaron Donald and the defense that he would play in. But, you know, who knows? I mean, he might have – it's like I brought up yesterday. There could be the Nashville factor of – maybe he's tired of always being in the spotlight. I don't think that's the case because Ndamukong Suh seems like the type that loves the spotlight, which he would get in L.A. Yeah. But, you know, New Orleans or Nashville, it wouldn't be as bright.
But also, too, if he's looking for, you know, a championship, and I don't think that's the case. I think he's looking for the biggest payday. I think we could all agree the Saints and the Rams are a little further ahead and a little closer from a talent standpoint
Agreed.
To winning a Super Bowl.
I mean, they all went to the playoffs. The Titans won one. The Rams didn't. I think the Saints had, what, one game better record than the Titans. I think they're all fairly close. I think the path to the championship for the Titans is significantly easier. The path to the division title and the path to an AFC title game, for example, is way easier in Nashville than it is in L.A. or New Orleans, where you've got to go through probably two or three elite quarterbacks to get to the championship game. So I don't know. I think they are better teams, better situations, more talent. Not sure the path to the championship is easy. It's like being in the best team in the Big 12 versus the second best team in the SEC West. Being Auburn every year is really tough. Being the best team in the Big 12 is a lot easier. You have a clearer path to the title, and that's why Oklahoma has done what Oklahoma has done.
One of the things that we were talking about, at least I was saying with Sue, is it's not so much on the field that I want him for his talent and what he provides as a player, but it's the attitude, it's the swagger, it's the identity. We are getting that with Mr. Byard, and that has gone to another level with the Sanders family.
Yeah, and I'll stand by what I said yesterday. And I love that Kevin Byard has... here's what I love. What I love is a byproduct of this Kevin Byard, Deion Sanders thing that's going on. The byproduct of this is that Deion Sanders is being exposed for a guy who doesn't work very hard as an analyst, the guy who clearly doesn't know the NFL well enough. I like that. I like when, because, you know, when a former player doesn't put in work to be a good broadcaster, as someone who has to put in a lot of work to be a good broadcaster, I enjoy that.
Exposing a fraud is fun.
I enjoy that. So I don't have anything against Deion. He is a fantastic – he is one of the greatest players I've ever seen play the game. He is not a great analyst, and it appears he does not work very hard at that. So I like that has been exposed. But my message yesterday, if I was a buddy of Kevin Byard, if I was in his circle, one of his PR guys – is still the same message. Why do you care what Deion Sanders has to say? One, why are you consistently and continuing to engage all of the time on Twitter in a debate and a conversation that is literally meaningless? It is a completely worthless conversation that means absolutely nothing to anyone.
Twitter can only blow up in your face.
There's nothing to be gained. Now, okay, Jalen Ramsey jumped in on Twitter and said, "You're a great player, man. Keep doing you." Okay, great. He got some respect from players, but they already, even in those tweets, they're saying, "We already know who's balling out. We already know that you're a great player." Like, everybody knows who's great. I think it's hilarious that Deion Sanders didn't know that he was talking to a player. I think that's awesome. I think that's my favorite part of the whole story. But there is still, my message yesterday is still the same to Kevin Byard, which is, who cares? Why are you getting involved in a meaningless discussion that benefits you zero? There is no benefit to you whatsoever. There's just no redeeming qualities to getting in a Twitter spat with a former NFL player who has stupid opinions and doesn't pay attention. I just don't. If I'm Kevin Byard's best friend, I'm going, dude, just put the phone down for a while. Who cares? Just focus on you, man. You're a great player. You're going to be a great player. You're a great member. People in Nashville love you. Your teammates love you. Other people in the league love you. Who cares what Deion Sanders has to say? Move on.
But if you are Mike Vrabel, do you take this as a teaching moment, a moment where here you are, new head coach? If I'm Mike Vrabel, I am taking Deion Sanders' Twitter spat with Kevin Byard, and I am plastering that in the locker room at Nissan Stadium, and I am saying one of the most noticeable, recognized guys in the history of professional football doesn't know our all-pro safety, and our team is still disrespected. I use that as fuel and motivation for Tennessee to go to the next level or at least repeat what they did last year and win a playoff game.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? Like, heading into the wild card weekend, you're going to print out some tweets from 9 months ago? And
I put it up at the start of camp, and I say, you know what?
These guys are pro athletes.
People are glossing over 2017. Let's show them that 2018 will be even better.
Avery Williamson said it when he was on our show. Every single play, someone's coming for his job. You know, they don't need motivation.
Right. But you can use it at the same time and basically say, hey, you know what? You haven't earned anything yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want a playoff game. It's great.
That would be my message to the team, for sure.
You know, and you and I disagree a little bit on this. Like I don't care that Kevin Byard, you know, defended himself and went after him. Like, that's fine.
Oh, I'm not angry at him or anything.
Yeah, and
I would have more of an issue of him going at it with a fan on Twitter,
oh, right, for sure,
as opposed to somebody who's paid to have an opinion, sure, that's totally clueless.
I think we're making such a big deal out of this because it's March 22nd. You know, I think if this
Deion's a big name.
Right, and if this had happened, you know, in the middle of the football season, it wouldn't be as big of a deal.
I just don't understand. You're on the NFL. You're paid by the league to know the league, and you're getting involved in a Twitter spat where you think an all-pro safety is a fan.
Yeah, it's pretty
stupid. That's like me coming on here at Bridgestone Arena and not knowing who the Predators head coach
is. His coverage of the
NFL is the same as how he tried to tackle people. It's dives at your ankles and falls on his face. And then, I mean, listen, Deion was great. He was an unbelievable cornerback. He was a great player.
Hall of Famer.
I mean, no question. Okay, I don't know. I'm not angry at Kevin Byard for going at him. My message is who cares? Like, right, why does he care? Like, stop. Just don't worry about it, dude. Just who cares? Throw it away. Let it roll off your back. Like, go to work. Everybody knows you're good.
All
the important people will know you're good. All the opposing quarterbacks sure as heck know who you are. So, you know what I mean? Like, you led the NFL in interceptions. You're an all-pro. Like, it's beneath you.
If Dan Patrick came after you and said, you know, go, like, be a fan. And look, you're on national radio. You're on Sirius XM. You're on this show. I mean, people in the college football circles know who Braden Gall is.
I've been on his show, Dan Patrick.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, if he did something like that to you, wouldn't you like say, hey, I've been on your show, like we've talked before, you know who I am? Or,
well, he's a professional, so he would hopefully remember that.
Shots.
No, that's the shot at Deion.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The shot at Deion. I don't know. It's different. It would benefit my brand to get in a Twitter spat with
the exactly. The Braden brand.
Now, right. He's technically not on Twitter, but I would have to know, like, if he was attacking me, because like we get attacked in our jobs all the time from fans, and they attack you for not knowing this or being biased towards that, and I don't mind the I view it as part of my job to get into the mud and or conversations with fans, because that's part of my job. I view that as I love this sport like everybody else does, whether it's hockey here on this show or college football on my other shows. Part of my salary is, in my opinion, is to interact with fans. I love getting on Twitter and interacting with people, disagreeing, agreeing, arguments, discussions. Hey, I learn stuff from people too, just as much as – but again, that's not the same thing as – you know, a media member and a player getting involved. Like, I'm not a professional football player. I don't know. I'm trying to draw the comparison in my head and try to figure out how that would mesh. And it doesn't mesh in my head, if that makes sense.
Coming up next, coffee.
I'd probably attack him. And then hopefully that gets me on the show and then I can grow my brand.
Coffee with the coach, Preds associate coach Kevin McCarthy is going to join us next on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in the Morning Drive on this Thursday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're broadcasting live from Jack Daniel's Barrel House inside of Bridgestone Arena. Time for Coffee with the Coach, which is brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts, the official coffee of the Nashville Predators, and Coffee with the Coach every Thursday morning right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We welcome an associate coach, Kevin McCarthy. Kevin, good morning, and thank you for the time.
Hey, no problem.
So let's talk a little bit about tonight's game against Toronto, one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. What is the key to extend this winning streak to 5 games in a row?
Well, right now, we believe that as well as Tampa's playing, that we feel that Toronto and Boston, you know, are probably playing at this point in the season, maybe even a little bit better than Tampa. So you know, obviously we have our hands full tonight, but they've got Matthews back. It'll be his first game back. He was out with a shoulder injury for about 4 weeks, so they're pretty healthy. You know, they got four pretty good lines, and you know, it's going to take, all of us here tonight to make sure that we play a real smart game. I think that it's one of those games where it's not what you make, it's what you leave. And we've got to be really smart with the puck. We have to make sure we establish a forecheck early. And I think the biggest thing tonight is we've got to make sure we don't allow any unnumbered rushes against. I think that's going to be the key for us.
So I was talking to Arvi and Matthias Ekholm last night, Coach, just about how you know, you're playing great hockey. You haven't lost in regulation in over a month. And how do you stay on the edge? And he said basically power play. We've got to work on the power play. So obviously that's something that is you guys something are you're working on over the next few days, next few games. How do you go about doing that? What's the coaching thing that you say to a team and says, hey, this is how we're going to get our power play going?
Well, yeah, I think the biggest thing is that it's the simplicity of your power play. I think the key is that when you're playing against teams that pressure like Toronto does, you've got to make those three quick passes to spread those guys out and take away their pressure and relieve it. And then once you do that, things will open up and you'll have time to make your plays. But I think the biggest thing for us is we talk about all the time is just that shot mentality. I think sometimes when you have that extra man on the ice, you look to maybe try to be too cute, looking for these plays that are a little too fancy sometimes. And I think your best route to the net is to shoot pucks and create that chaos that happens. And I think the biggest thing for us as a team is we got to make sure that we do a really good job of having that net presence. I think any time you can take that goalie's eyes away, especially on the power plays, that's a huge plus. And we've talked about that. I think we all know what we have to do to be successful. Now the key is the execution.
Coach Kevin McCarthy joining us here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coach, I know you guys couldn't care less about what the experts say, but the experts in Las Vegas now have you guys as the favorites to win the whole thing. You guys have done an unbelievable job this year because the goal is to get back and win it this time in the Stanley Cup Finals, but it really seems like despite the eyes being on the big prize at the end of the road, you guys really do take it one game at a time, which is evident in all these winning streaks that you guys have been able to rattle off. What is the message and how does that get delivered? Is it from you? Is it from Lavi? Is it from the leadership in the dressing room to just take it one period at a time? And obviously the end result will take care of itself.
Well, I think like Lavi is obviously the guy that, he's the guy that, sets the message and puts everything in place. And, from there, it's your leadership group. It's Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis and the rest of your leadership team that take it over. And I think once that coach leaves the dressing room, then it's up to the players to follow. And I think that we have a really good group of guys here that take that message that Lavi has sent and make sure that everybody's held accountable in that dressing room. And I think the biggest thing right now is the guys have been through the playoff wars in last year and the previous years, and we all know what it takes. And I think the biggest thing right now is we want to make sure that we go into the playoffs playing the right way. I think that's the biggest thing is you want to make sure that, your habits are good and you're doing all the right things. And I think the biggest plus that we have is that we have a lot of good leaders in that room that make sure that they hold each other accountable. And that's a huge plus for the coaching staff.
Coach, when you look at this team and all the success, obviously a lot of great players, but Pekka Rinne is having an exceptional season, maybe a Vezina Trophy season. What has been the difference in your mind between his play this year and his play last year?
Well, as strange as it might sound, I think, last year obviously was a huge confidence builder for everybody, including Pex, even though he's been around for a long time. I think that, going through what we did last year, really makes the players, see where they are, where they need to be successful. And I think once you go through that and you've got that situation where you've got those playoffs under your belt and some success in the playoffs, that it really starts to transfer into the regular season. And I think that Pex is one of those guys that it's like the old saying, an old dog doesn't learn new tricks, but he has. I mean, he's changed for the game. Our goalie coach, Ben Vanderklok, has done an excellent job with both Pex and UC of, doing the right things to change with the game, the style. And I think Pex has really bought into that and done a really good job of changing a few things technically. And it's really paid off.
Coach Kevin McCarthy joining us on Morning Drive. We appreciate the time as always. Best of luck tonight, and let's keep that win streak going.
Thanks. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. Kevin McCarthy, Coffee with the Coach, which is brought to you every Thursday here on Morning Drive by the great folks at Dunkin' Donuts. I'm going to actually get the number for tonight's game. Let's just see if this is actually Lock City to make it five in a row. But also, let's get an update on the poll question, because I don't think we actually gave the official wording on the air. The poll question is up. People are voting at 1025_MD, but the actual wording of the poll question is Hall of Fame related. As we were talking earlier this morning about Pekka and other Preds that could make the Hall of Fame, and Chase has an update.
Yeah, so the wording is, when you think of Hall of Fame, what is the first that comes to mind? And we are taking write-ins as well, because we only have four choices. But we put Cooperstown for baseball, Canton for professional football, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then other. 49% right now say Cooperstown for baseball. And then we have a write-in for the Hockey Hall of Fame. We also have a write-in for the Country Music Hall of Fame as well.
All right, so we're getting a little representation locally. You can continue to vote on that at 1025_MD. The number for tonight, Toronto and Nashville, the Preds are minus 182. Mm. And that's against a Toronto team that's about, what, 20 games over 500?
Yeah.
So that's a
– it's a very good hockey team.
That's
Toronto.
A healthy number.
Toronto is actually a team out of the East that scares me, to be honest.
They're fast, big, talented team. Yeah, I agree.
Of the three or four elite teams in the East – I think this is the team that's the least scary between Boston, Tampa. I would actually.
I think there's five of them.
I'd rather play Toronto than Pittsburgh.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Boston and Pittsburgh are the two that scare me. Tampa's in that group. I would take Washington or Toronto.
See, I'm not as scared of Tampa as some people.
They're so fast.
I think the matchups are better though. I think the Preds match up better with them.
Well, and Vasilevskiy's tired, so.
So am I.
I'm going to go Preds tonight, 3-2. Close one. Preds 3, Maple Leafs 2. 615-737-1025. We have a big couple of hours coming up. Jason Wolf from the Tennessean is going to join us. Rick Bird's going to join us live on site to break down the Sweet 16 for a couple of segments. We've got Hal Gill coming up. But when we come back, Vegas has installed a new favorite for the Stanley Cup Finals. We'll get into that on the other side. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive on this Thursday, ESPN 1025 The Game. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason will be back with us tomorrow as he wraps up his vacation. Chase McCabe, looking forward to the next couple of hours. Rick Bird, Belmont head coach, is going to join us for about a half hour live on site. We'll break down the Sweet 16 and the rest of March Madness. Jason Wolf from the Tennesseans coming up to start the next segment, but kind of putting a little bit of a bow here on some of the Preds discussion, and we'll mix in some Titans as well. The new odds-on favorite to win the Stanley Cup Finals, and you guys know I put a ton of stock into what Vegas says. For a variety of reasons, the Nashville Predators are now your odds-on favorite to win the Cup. Are you concerned? Any correlation between other sports when we talk about the favorites to win and possibly getting knocked off when you have these kind of expectations?
Well, it's interesting. We were looking kind of back at the Stanley Cup in general, and you got the Blackhawks who won it as a 4 seed, the Kings won it as a 6 seed, and the Kings won it as an 8 seed. And then you've had a ton of teams make it to the Cup as 6s, 7s, and 8s, and of course, obviously the Predators last year are one of them. If college basketball this month is any indication, being the 1 seed is not a good thing. They're the odds-on favorite. So Virginia was the number 1 seed of the entire tournament, and something happened to them that had never happened in the history of the sport. Now, I think that's an extreme rarity. That's a one-off. That's anecdotal. I don't think that applies. I think I like the Vegas odds angle better than the President's Trophy angle. No first time ever President's Trophy winner has ever won a Stanley Cup, and only two of them have won the Cup since in the last 15 years. So, you know, listen, the odds are that you have home ice throughout the playoffs. Again, I had a couple fans come up to me yesterday at Smashville Live say, we're like you, Braden. We like being the underdog. and actually, Matthias Ekholm was asked this exact question about whether or not, you know, what are the pluses and the minuses of being a 1 seed and being the odds-on favorite and being a sort of, you know, being the 8 seed like you did last year. And he said there were some pros and cons to both of them. And so it's a very honest answer from him last night. I thought about that. And they had to crank it. And the answer is obvious. They had to crank it up with 20 to 25 games to go in the season to fight so hard to get in that they were playing at their best. And, you know, he didn't even know the score of the game against Buffalo the other day. He's like, what did we win, like 4-0? And, like, because they lost track. They're just crushing. They're just crushing people. They lost track of how many goals they've scored. So that's
that one game at a time mentality.
That's sort of the concern, is that they're just in cruise control. How do you ramp it up for the postseason? Well, they acknowledge that they're professional athletes, and that's their job.
Let me ask you this, though, because my whole thing has been, how does somebody beat this team that has home ice, that has the goaltender that they have, 4 out of 7 games? If I were to say the Nashville Predators are going to stumble in the Stanley Cup playoffs because of blank, what would it be? An opponent's certain skill set of players, or something that just goes awry with our own team?
I think there's two things that come to mind first, and that's the obvious one is injuries. If you lose Ryan Johansson and Ryan Ellis and or Pekka Rinne, like, you know, I still think they can win a bunch of games, but injuries is number one. Number two is an opponent's goaltender. I mean, a goaltender steals series all the time in the NHL in the postseason. Pekka Rinne stole 2 games against the Penguins last year at home. So, I mean, you run into a hot goaltender, sometimes the best teams in the NHL just get stopped. And so to me, it's is John Gibson just have an unbelievable series for Anaheim in a series that's already very physical and difficult? Is Jonathan Quick, Jonathan Quick stole the entire cup one year as an 8 seed. He won the Stanley Cup. Could Connor Hellebuyck be that player? I mean, there's a handful of goaltenders that you just go, man, you run into that guy and he steals you an absolute series, and you look up at the end of the series and you go, how the heck did that happen? And the guy just stood on his head for 7 games.
And the way Pekka has played, I just really can't see how he, you know, falls kind of on his face when he's played so well this season. I mean, could he have an off night, a bad game? Yes. Is he going to all of a sudden stumble for an entire 7-game series? I just don't see that.
No, I don't see that either. But again, that's even if he plays just average hockey, a guy like Mike Smith could steal a series. I mean, again, there were other factors there, as Chase pointed out earlier in the show. But Mike Smith stole a series from the Predators just a couple years ago. They had no business winning that series. Mike Smith straight up took it from him, and that can happen. It was not I who asked this. This was a listener. Great question by one of the listeners who asked Matthias Ekholm last night on Smashville Live. We've got one more next week, by the way, on Wednesday. What's the difference between being a 1 seed and an 8 seed, and how different is it, and what would you rather be? And this was Matthias Ekholm's answer last night on Smashville Live.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just different because it's when you're, like last year, we were 16th seed in the playoffs and we were last in, and then you really had to fight for your wins. Like, you didn't get anything for granted. You couldn't take anything easy. They didn't just come to you. And now when you're on that roll, it's like the game in Buffalo, I didn't think we played at 10% of our capability how we can play, and then we still get, what was it, 4-0?
Yeah.
So it's just like they just pile up pretty much. And they, I mean, you just got to enjoy it, I guess.
So that was Matthias Ekholm last night with you at Smashville Live. He says they're on a roll. Let me ask you this, because I feel like we've heard differing opinions on this word in a variety of sports from a variety of people. Momentum. Do you believe in momentum when it comes to the postseason? I'm not just talking about being on a win streak of 5 in a row, or all of a sudden you're kind of in a lull and you lose 3 of your final 4, but from the sheer standpoint of momentum, both mentally and just feeling like it's your destiny and everything that goes with it, how much stock do you put in that?
Oh, I think momentum's big, especially in hockey. Certainly it carried this team. I think last year the momentum is probably what won them Game 5 in Anaheim in the Western Conference Finals last year. It was just sheer momentum and sort of passion and energy. I think what's interesting about his answer there is where he says, well, we probably played at 10% and we still won 4-0. That is dangerous. That's dangerous, because if a team feels like it can go out there and give 80% and win, that's where you get – that is what complacency is. That's dangerous. Now, I think he's aware of it, and they're aware of it, and they acknowledge it. And so the fact that they know about it, I think, is important, and they are paying attention to that because they know how dangerous it was last – how difficult it was last year. But that's what you don't want is for a team to just be able to show up and just win by showing up, because that's when you get beat. And that's what you don't want, is them to just think that they can show up and win. I don't think that locker room is made up that way, but that is a dangerous thing to keep an eye on, because that's hey, we only played 10% of our game and we still won, what, 4-0? That's the attitude that gets you caught into a malaise of confidence that you don't want.
The Honky Tonk Hat Trick is brought to you by Bud Light. It's back tonight. Join me from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at Rippey's prior to the Predators showdown with Toronto. While you're there, register for a pair of tickets to the game and passes to the Bud Light VIP zone, or you may win a VIP hockey experience. Be sure to stop by Tootsie's, Rippey's, and Honky Tonk Central before Predators weekday home games for specials on Bud Light. The VIP hockey experience is a pair of tickets to an upcoming game, dinner for two before the game, and a ride on the Zamboni during intermission, and stop by Rippey's after every Preds home game for two-for-one drinks until close. When we come back, we get back to some Titans discussion. Jason Wolf from the Tennessean will give us the latest on Ndamukong Suh and how likely it is that the Titans land the big defensive tackle in free agency. That's coming up next. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Chase McCabe. It is Morning Drive. We're live from Bridgestone Arena on ESPN 102.5 The Game.